David Rakoff, author of the humorous essay collections Fraud, Don't Get Too Comfortable, and Half Empty, as well as a frequent contributor to Public Radio International's This American Life, has died. Last year, Rakoff won a well-deserved James Thurber Prize for American Humor. In 1987, Rakoff was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, but overcame it after 18 months of treatment. In 2010, he was diagnosed with a malignant tumor, was forced to start chemotherapy again. He lost his battle with cancer last night. Rakoff, a Canadian by birth who lived in New York City, learned he had a tumor while writing Half Empty, his book in defense of pessimism and melancholy. David Rakoff was on the roundtable in 2010 when Half Empty was released. We spoke with him about pessimism, elitism, and public radio.
Was it interesting and was it enjoyable for you to write about pessimism?
Interesting, undoubtedly. Yes, absolutely. It was extremely interesting because it, in fact, incorporates every aspect of the entire world. It can blanket any topic, whether it's science or psychology or just sort of personal introspection or dry fact. You know, so in that sense, it's a wonderful lens, but and it's the opposite of limiting. Enjoyable is a different question, only insofar as I don't necessarily find writing terribly enjoyable. I find having written is deeper than merely being enjoyable. It's as sustaining as a blood transfusion, but writing, doing the writing, is as unpleasant as being stuck with the needle for said transfusion. It's just, I find it tremendously difficult, and it never gets easier. In fact, it almost gets harder. So I guess the short answer to that would be yes and no.
When I asked the question, I guess I was thinking in the context of the subject matter, enjoyable in looking at, of being able to parse the subject and to investigate it.
Yes, absolutely. Fascinating, absolutely. And also kind of vindicating. A lot of the stuff that I kept on covering, whether it was, you know, psychological tests and findings and studies, explained me to myself, which was very nice, and also sort of let me off the hook in a way. The whole notion that just because something feels good doesn't necessarily mean that it is intrinsically good, you know, was tremendously vindicating to have someone say articulately in ways that I really hadn't been able to form the sentence. You know, it's nice to feel pride. I mean, literally feels good to feel pride. You know, the endocrinological cascade of non-stressor hormones and firing in your prefrontal cortex or whatever, it literally feels good to feel pride. But it doesn't necessarily mean that pride is good. So it was very interesting to find that it was a false equation and one that has real traction in the culture at large. And it was nice to hear people much smarter than me say, well, no, that's actually not the case, and it's not always true. And so, yeah, that was very enjoyable, actually.
What are the common elements that come together that attracts you to a particular subject to write about it and to invest time in?
You know, I'm really incredibly fortunate in that there are almost no common elements. I guess if I were really searching for common elements in everything that I've written about, because it has really been my great privilege to not be pigeonholed. I get to cover the waterfront in the luckiest way for any writer, because it's really nice to be able to go out there and get to be, you know, for a little while, a mini expert on something, and then move on. You know, so it's great if you have a sort of a generalist slash dilettante view of the world that you're interested in everything, you know, but kind of a short attention span. It's perfect. So there really are no common elements, which is really nice. It means that I have a very varied areas of interest that people let me explore. I guess the only common element would be that none of them are sports or cars or finance. But that's pretty well it, I think.
In several of the reviews of your work, I see the word sardonic. Do you feel that that's an apt description?
Yeah, I like sardonic. Sardonic's a nice word. It's a very nice word. And it's. I often also get tarred with brushes that I don't think I deserve. a lot of the times people will focus on what they perceive to be my vocabulary, which is a fine vocabulary, but it's really not as good as people think it is. And so sometimes I get tarred with the elitist brush, which really sets my teeth on edge, because it would only be elitist if I used my vocabulary and then burned every dictionary that was in existence. Do you know what I mean? And it strikes me as essentially doing the right wing's work for them. You know what I mean? Because there's this real sort of false populism of being anti-intellectual, you know, and what it does essentially is it gets a populace to vote against its own self-interest, and, you know, it enriches Dick Cheney and the Halliburton Corporation. But that's neither here nor there. So, yes, I do like sardonic.
Well, you sort of start off semi-elitist just being on public radio, though, right?
No, why? Why is that elitist? Why
well, I don't believe that it is, but being on public radio, I counter that a lot.
I know, but it's a false equation. It's not elitist. It's simply not elitist. This is the thing. This all used to be the absolute domain and province of the progressive end of the political spectrum. I mean, every Frank Capra movie, you know, who couldn't be more of the common man, but every Frank Capra movie is essentially based on Mr. Public, Mr. Smith, you know, essentially moving ahead because knowledge is power. It's the thing that gets people out of, you know, dead-end factory jobs. It's the thing that gives the power of self-government to the people themselves. And then somehow, I don't know, the right has managed to turn it into this a closed door, when in fact it is the open door. And I really think that it's up to all of us who work in public radio or who use, you know, words or something to really counter that accusation, because it's so false and so counterfactual, so not what's actually the case, you know, that it's so heartbreaking to me. You know what I mean?
I do, and especially with the program that you work so closely with, This American Life, which is, I mean, the antidote to that.
Well, exactly. And even This American Life, someone once said, it's like, oh, it's so quirky. And he said it in this absolutely dismissive way. And it's like, well, it's actually the opposite of quirk. It's about sincerity. So I think that it is our duty, but one doesn't want to be the sort of humorless women's studies major about everything. But, you know, if you can somehow say gently but eloquently, like, hey, now, let's actually examine what just got said, sort of thing. Because I know sometimes I can seem a little ranty.
How did you come to This American Life? How did that partnership come to be?
Well, I was, you know, working in publishing and lived downtown and met David Sedaris, and we became friends, and we were doing theater, downtown theater, you know, during my off hours from the publishing job and everything. And at that point, Ira Glass was his radio producer, but just out of Chicago. Ira was like a cub reporter on the education beat. And we all became friends, and then he began this show that was initially called Your Radio Playhouse. So, you know, I was in sort of on the ground floor. I knew all those guys before any of it began.
And so it didn't take you long to get the feel of the show and what they wanted.
Well, I think it wasn't quite, I don't think it went in that direction, actually. I think it went in the other direction, which was that people were doing work and it was the kind of protean brush fire sort of encompassing of so many different elements that sort of shaped the show, as opposed to the other way around, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So it was the tail wagging the dog in some
respects. I think so, or many tails wagging one central dog. It was a very sort of decentralized kind of thing. They, you know, they took all these disparate elements and then they sort of wove them together thematically. And I think they still sort of do it.
How much do you have, do you still try to keep your hand in that as much as possible?
You know, I'm not very prolific. As a guy, I love doing stuff for the show. It's one of the things of which I'm most fond. I love working for them and being part of that show.
David Rakoff, the writer, radio personality, and sometime actor, died yesterday of cancer. He was 47 years old. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
What'll I do when you are far away and I'm so blue? What'll I do? What'll I do when I am wondering who is kissing you? What'll I do?